We're gonna go ahead and get our work session started. It is Tuesday, July 18th, 2018, and it is 6:03 p.m. here in the Cedar Hills Community Center. We have today on our work session agenda a presentation by the Utah County Health Department's anti-substance abuse youth outreach. And then I don't see anybody here from that group yet, so let's go ahead and move on to the second item, which is an update on the fiscal year 2019 city council goals. Mr. Bigler will present. And just to give the council an update, Chairman and I talked about this. I don't know if there's gonna be much of an update today since the fiscal year just started. But in January, when we had our retreat, the council came up with goals for the fiscal year 2019, and Chairman and I discussed having our work session at the council meeting. Update from and or other staff members on your wrap of those goals throughout this winter.
Even though we're only like 16 days into the fiscal year, there actually is updates. So it's a nice part about getting a 6 month head start on some of these priorities. Yes, hopefully the work sessions that we have can be a form for work and less on closed sessions. So that'd be a positive. But as we go through this, there are a number of issues here that. There are a number of things that we can update council on, or I can defer to outreach. All right, we'll be fast. In public works, they're in the kind of heat of their time of year. During the summer, that's when they try to get most of their projects done throughout the year. They're constantly watching the PI system, and right now we have a road project going on. As we watch the PI system, we notice that there's a number of projects that need to happen. As we talk about our infrastructure utility analysis, we're looking at a couple of, when the PI season ends, we're looking at a couple of projects that we know we need to do, one of them being refurbishing Cockle Park. Another one being that the parking boosters in the south end of town need an overhaul or updated. So we're looking at a couple of these projects and wondering where is best to allocate the funds. And we feel like those are some really apropos areas as the city has to tighten up on them. Charlotte has been working with the arborist on the review and replacement of trees, and we're working with Insight Design on that master plan. We're expecting the master plan for the trees on the Harvey Park, Ski Park, and Heritage Park, I believe. So we'll look forward to when that comes out in the community services, helping to plan for Harvey Park and the amenities that we see there. So when the time comes, we'll be working with the council and mayor as we determine how to best phase those amenities in. And something, for example, Laurie Anderson, one of our community's events, our community services individuals, she really wants to see a lot of people involved for us. There's a huge demand for people involved right now. So we're starting to see, we're trying to incorporate those, that feedback as we design the park. From the finance perspective, Charlotte's been working hard on the Harvey Park funding, and as we look at the capital improvements plan, some of these projects that were in the public works utility infrastructure analysis, such as the refurbishment of the Cockle Park, we'll look down at the capital improvements plan as well. So you'll see some synergy there in the planning department. And then on the admin and planning, the commercial development, we're going to be discussing that tonight. So we'll have a big update we'll give you later tonight. And then on the AD housing element, MAG, Mountain Association of Governments, has been working on that. We have a meeting with them on Friday to get an update on where they are on that. So we appreciate their help. I'm grateful for their work they're doing. And finally, on the public safety level of service evaluation, we punted it tonight. We're not going to have this discussion until we've got the final numbers on the monthly buyout permits. Best to let those happen two separate times. So we're meeting with they're going to do an audit of work for the district to determine what that buyout number is. We feel it's the best way to do this so it's amicable to any parties. We're meeting tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon to have the kickoff meeting. So we're hoping that in the next 2 weeks we have those numbers this week. Then present to the council on those RFPs. Those RFPs have been made public to you. Keep in mind, however, those numbers are still private. We met with each of those entities over the last few days, and we have some follow-up questions that we're going to ask each one of them in order to be able to give you guys the best information to make those decisions that we need to make on Monday from here, apples to apples. We don't want to want to make sure that those bids are as fair as we can. But nonetheless, I'm anticipating August 7th for that meeting. Any questions on the bills? I know it goes pretty fast, but we're kind of just stepping into the new year right now. So if there is something that you have as a priority that you feel like we looked or didn't cover, we'll be happy to discuss it.
Okay, so we'll move on to the presentation by the Utah County Health Department and the Substance Abuse Group Outreach. Come on up, introduce yourselves.
Hi, so I'm Delaney Mon. So I live in Boa, and I'm a youth leader representing outreach. And we're a youth-led organization, and our purpose is to try and reduce substance abuse among children and youth. We do this through advocacy and education. As we talk as an organization and with our adult leaders, we realize that while a lot of work has been done to get to know our state legislators, not a lot has been done to get to know the local ones. So we want to get to know you guys better, and we would like to give you guys a new survey to figure out what your feelings are about various substance abuse issues. So we've been in contact with Chloe, and she asked us to email you guys the survey, so this was done afternoon. So with this information, you can better understand that there are certain issues that you as a city council care about more than others or see a problem in your city. We can hopefully work with you guys in the future to find a way to address these problems. So the survey is primarily multiple choice, but there is one open-ended short answer question. So all responses are anonymous. So background and demographic questions will only be used to describe the general characteristics survey participants, and they can't trace back to you. So if you don't want to answer a particular question, that's fine. Go ahead and skip it. And then if your answer does not exactly align, find the closest answer or skip it as well. So I have a business card for you guys, just in case you guys have any questions about the survey, so you can email my coordinator, Sarah, and she can answer those for you. Thank you guys for taking the time to fill out the survey.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
What are you going to do with all these survey answers?
So we are going to use them to just figure out your opinions so we can look at what legislation you might want to pass in the future.
So what does your group do as far as you have a problem you need to address? How are you addressing that?
So we are going to, so obviously we're going to look at what we want to figure out as a problem. And then we are going to, as a youth-led organization, we're going to figure out, are we going to talk to legislators? Are we going to go to schools and address this and educate people on these certain issues? So,
Jeremy, do you want to put So, with this information, we will see what it is that each city has a concern about and what our county overall has a concern. And then we're going to look to see if we can work with the cities or with the county to pass any local policies that would help with whatever your concerns are. Or if there is a major concern from you guys filling out the survey, particularly in your city, then we would like to come back and work with you specifically on that concern and what it is that we can do as a help, as a youth group to help you to address that concern, whatever it is that it might be. And if there's a huge concern within your school here in your city, what can we do to address that as well?
So I did take your survey, and a lot of the questions that seemed were geared towards policies that can vary state level, harsher penalties for those that provide alcohol to youth, or things that are outside of the city control. Are there cities that you've worked with institute city policies to address some of these issues, or are you just getting started with that?
So we're just getting started with this. A lot of it was what the state legislatures would do. So for an example, this is kind of more structured, maybe to kind of bring it home for you. I think there was a question about tobacco on there. That's been at a state level for the last 4 or 5 years. It's been unsuccessful. Let's just say, for an example, all of Utah County ended up being on support with that, right? Then maybe we would try to work with each city, if you guys were really in support of that, of Utah County becoming a county where tobacco 21, where they had to be 21 in order to purchase tobacco within our county. Does that make sense? I would bring it back on a local level. So it just kind of depends what your thoughts and your opinions part of that. And then I know another one talked about with the parks, the joints have already updated your city code to include cigarettes with that. So thank you, by the way. So it's not anything that we need to be concerned about, but there are still a few cities out there who are still fighting on that and haven't done it. And so that was another one that was addressed to see if we can get kind of their opinions on that and maybe to get back to them and say, so 5 out of the 6 of you in your city believe that we should have vaping in our city code or parks, but you've yet to do update your city code or who you work with, you know, different things like that. Yeah. Any questions?
So, other than those, do you have any preconceived thesis that you're trying to bring forward or notions that you would like to see already?
Not necessarily. So I know that's been a concern is with the parks, and I know that there is a concern for the youth themselves within the schools, and maybe the cities can help with having a stronger voice. Because even though each school does have a tobacco policy, youth tell me all the time how much, you know, use that they see at their school. But we don't really have any preconceived pieces of thoughts. We just really are open to whatever opinions are. And I know that there's questions on there with marijuana, and that's a huge thing right now for a lot of people. And so I guess if I maybe have a thought, it would be that a lot of people will have comments towards that. And I could see a lot of us going in a direction that way of addressing the issue with marijuana, which fits right in with what we do. Even though we're a tobacco group, individuals have found out ways to add marijuana into their e-cigarette or into their Juul. So then that becomes Juul. So Juul is a new electronic device. It looks just like a USB. And yeah, so it's so they make that as well.
Like a USB, like a thumb drive type
of
thing?
Yes.
So it's not the big old monster things?
No. And it's teachers think that they're just passing around a thumb drive.
Yes. Yeah. I was looking to be having right there. I have one in my first view. I don't know what a thumb drive is.
I've never heard of it, sorry.
No, you're totally fine. It's new.
No teenagers.
you're just fine. It's newer here in Utah. Anyways, it's been out for a couple of years.
What's it called again?
Juul. J-U-U-L. And you can look it up and...
Can I buy it at parts?
No, is there yet?
I've actually seen it. At the parts.
There were... Just a couple of stores, but I know it's getting into more schools, stores now. So she's also, I asked her if she's one of our underage tobacco buyers, so she goes in and attempts to buy in hopes that they won't sell it to her.
Just curious, do you ever get sold to?
I've been sold to once.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, I can't.
So she probably lost her job.
So, and it just depends license. On the city, and so. It depends on... I don't know. It really, there's no rhyme or reason to it. Some quarters, it seems like we had like 15 people we sold, and then there's some quarters where they did what they were supposed to, and we only had like 1 or 0. So there's really no rhyme or reason to that. Yeah. But with the Juul, Juul has nicotine, so that's kind of a huge concern for us. Some kids can vape without the nicotine, but they have learned to put other substances in there besides just marijuana. And you can go on YouTube and figure out how to do that with your Juul as well. Yeah, there's over 10,000 different videos of how to do this.
How to add
other harbor substances. So is there a thing, something in your city that you feel has been a concern?
Well, I mean, you hear a lot about the opioid epidemic, and I know that that's been just access to those kinds of substances at high school is a concern. Just the number of kids who are now vaping, and they're making it easy with flavors that are enticing to some teens? Those are all concerns.
And for, so this is our youth group in our county, but it's also a statewide youth group. And so as a state, the youth are hoping to work on limiting the flavors this year. The theory behind that, if you limit flavors to just specialty shops, less you could possibly use, because a specialty shop is considered a vape shop only, and you have to be 19. So instead of having the different flavors at the gas station, it's only that large vape shop. So just like a long time ago, they had flavored cigarettes, they took the flavored cigarettes away, smoking went down. They're hoping that would be the same.
I know right now the state allows cities to prohibit tobacco specialty shops in their cities, which we have passed ordinance to.
Yeah, we just passed on.
So we don't allow specialty smoke shops in our city.
Yeah. And then they've also passed that to locals where they have to get a special permit from us, and we make sure that they follow the law exactly, and that they are within so many feet of certain areas within the law. There's has to do with schools, churches, anywhere basically where you are. So, yeah.
As a youth, what are you concerned about?
Definitely about smoking in schools. Like, I know that there have been certain points, like in a school day, where certain hallways are just covered in smoke, like around like the bathrooms, because people have been going in there during lunch or during different breaks and just smoking. And it's definitely a concern, because I don't want to be inhaling anything that somebody else is putting in their lungs, because that's not my choice. And so, yeah, that definitely is a concern for me. Yeah, and it's a little, you know, interesting to think that it could be something, putting something harder in there, and nobody would know, and I could still be inhaling some of that as well. So, that's definitely one of my main concerns.
What high school do you go
to? I go to Timothy High School.
Let's be honest, this doesn't happen at any of the schools, right? So, and I've used them all over our county, ages 12 to 18.
See where your kids get to.
And it's interesting the comments that I receive
right now. I thought we need to have a training session on the terminology.
Yeah.
We have no idea what's happening.
Do you do training activities or seminars and stuff for kids in communities or schools or what?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I go into schools. A lot of it's been through health teachers, and I give presentations. But we really want to be able to work with parents, and that's been something that we've it's kind of been, I guess, a roadblock for us.
Teaching students and you.
So any help with that, we would definitely appreciate that. And we would love to be able to educate parents or adults more. We're trying to move out this year with like PTA. I know each school district has those parent nights with just kind of mental health nights. And I go to those, but not a lot of individuals show up. I've been trying to get the schools to into their staff meetings just to educate all staff. Hasn't been a huge success. But anything. So if you end up, you guys want a seminar, want some education, I'm welcome to come back. If you want to do something within your city, where they bring like adults together for some educational night, I would love to be able to promote that as well. There's a new state campaign that's going on right now that they just launched that will be helping to educate parents more.
How are you funding?
Through the state and through CDC, and then part of it is through the Master's Settlement Grant, where the tobacco companies have to give back to that.
You're welcome.
It's your percentage of what you do. Thank you for smoking.
You're welcome.
It's so great. That guy's good. And he's good.
That's for sure.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yes.
I want her.
Thank you so much.
But I'm too old. But I'm not hip enough.
You don't even know what a jewel is.
Right.
I didn't. Actually, what's it like?
Mr. Goodman, is there anything else you'd like to add? anything specific that you'd like to discuss during the work session?
Maybe we can go over the procedure panels. Okay, so we brought this to the planning commission, the Cedar Canyon subdivision, just a quick update, this is the 80 lot subdivision, part of the settlement agreement that we've been working on for a few months. There's been some developments today that I want to make everyone aware of. So let's start with the planning commission's recommendations and then maybe establish those when we go from there. In your memo from the council packet, the planning commission met last Tuesday, discussed this, they approved it 3-1, and they did give a couple of recommendations to the city council that I want to go over right now. One was, it's kind of hard to see, this is lot 70 right here, so we're talking, this is what I'm talking about here. We met with the fire department, and we want to make sure that this portion right here from Cedarville, sorry, from 4700 West to, it says Wildflower Lane right there, but it's going to be renamed Lily Lane. This portion is available for the fire truck or fire apparatus or public safety vehicles to be able to drive over and onto the street there. So we'll keep that further. The fence that's going to be put in, it's going to have a gap in it. We want to make sure that on their plans, they show some sort of structural surface there that can be through the fire apparatus. So that was one of the recommendations. Another one was, as you look at these lots from right here to this point to this point below it, see these lines that go across, that's the grade. It's grading into the lot, not away from the lot. So the staff was concerned about the fact that there could be some drainage issues if you have designed driveways going into the house, all that flooding going into the house. Meaning, Corey, their streets are raised like this in order to connect to the existing utilities and tie in there. But they will be reverse slope driveways, meaning that the driveways will slope away from the house. So there won't be any flooding issues there. The planning commission also, along these lots right here, these are the existing homes that are going to back up to these proposed homes. They wanted to require that as part of the design elements that the homeowner be responsible for planting a tree in their backyard in order to increase the vegetative wall, some sort of barrier or use to back on these homes to the south. That was one. These two lots, this parcel and this parcel right here, they're both parks. They're listed as open space. They wanted to rename the park space, which is fairly simple. They wanted to, one planning commissioner wanted to extend the concrete fence, which it currently is being proposed from this point around the commercial area and then south to this point. He wanted to extend it along this southern border, east-west, along here. That's outside of the scope of the settlement agreement. I need to be very frank on that. As part of our settlement agreement, we approved this building by July 31st. It does get extended to this point. However, it does work within a significant cost of development installed along this point. So the second, another recommendation the Planning Commission made was that rather than just installing a single line of fence along the perimeter, usually we have this wall of vinyl, to break it up with an architectural element, architectural pillar that has some sort of masonry on it, and they give us a location where they wanted that to be. They've set it up every 80 feet, is what they told. So we'll just want that called out in the design elements. And then a fence extender. Inside the, with the lots being this small, I'm sympathetic to the fact that if everyone puts up a fence on their yard, it's going to look like Little Caesar fence all over. So staff is recommending that there be a requirement for open fencing on the interior so that you can still see green space and breaks up that visual site so that it's not just, you're not just seeing vinyl fencing. I went through the development agreement, CC&Rs today, and I went over it with Chris Grandpa, which will be in attendance tonight. And I wanted to just bring up a number of issues that I think can get clarified and improve this. So one of them is the fencing. So if you open up the design guidelines for this development, 3.1, it talks about fencing. Right now there is a fencing requirement. It says the fencing permitted within Cedar Canyon will match the architectural style of the homes and tie into the neighborhood look. The homes here are craftsman style, but I would like a provision there that adds that as open fencing. The city has a definition for open fencing. It's just to keep that. We have an HOA adjacent to us here that has the same requirements just to prevent fencing going up. On 3.3, the wall is only being shown to this corner right here. When the settlement agreement states it's down to this corner, so we just want to extend that and make that change. And then we wanted to call out that on the, it says 6-foot vinyl fence along here. We just want to call out the 6-foot vinyl fence with decorative pillars at least of date.
That's just on the two rows, though, is what the recommendation was, right?
These two right here.
Yeah, just those two.
Yeah,
not the back.
Yeah. It's to break up this expanse here as you drive along so you're not just seeing a really long vinyl fence.
Approximately 80 feet. Can I talk?
Yeah, please. Why don't you come up here and talk to Mike? So when you do talk, get it on.
Let me just go up here and point. It'll be a little easier. Just on this, it won't be exactly. I just want to make sure we're all clear. So we've got a precast wall joint here around the commercial. So you have a column here. We want to have them here on this trail opening. So you kind of do the math backwards. So you go 8 feet, you go in here. So I try to kind of space it evenly where it makes sense with trail openings and things like that. So then we do one here. And then I said, okay, I know I need one here on this point. I need one here on this point. So we can have a couple here. So I kind of sent Chandler a polka dot map, kind of showed where I'd have here. And then here we can have inside your triangles and stuff. And so anyway, that's all I was going to say on those. So it'll be about roughly every 8 feet.
So maybe we should add the word approximately.
Yeah.
That gives you guys some flexibility.
Yeah.
But that way you're not held every 6 feet when there's a puddle step. You just make this a bit.
Right. And then we're going to be leaving an opening.
Yes.
Like here, for our apartments. So the pre-gas will come down to about here, and that'll be an opening through here. Yes. Yeah. We're going to make that look like some GR, so we want people trying to slip through there.
Yes. And then we talked about that. I talked about the homeowner being responsible for planting an extra tree in the backyard, which is part of the design guidelines. One of the planning commissioners, Chairman Briggs, wanted to have along this same corridor, these homes in the back of these roads, this road, 4600 West, City Hills Drive. He was concerned about the visual look of these homes we have, so he wanted to see a second architectural element above 6 feet, so above the fence line, so that as you're walking down, you see two architectural elements as well as the architectural element of the fence. That was a recommendation. From staff, and this is a recommendation on setbacks. I know we've established the setbacks, and I'm not recommending we change the setbacks, but I do want to add a provision that at no point shall a home be built closer than 8 feet to an adjacent home, and that's for fire code. For fire code, if a home is, so we, right now the setbacks are 10 feet total, and if, so one can be 3, one can be 7. So if one home builds the home 3 feet from the property line, and the adjacent home builds one 3 feet from the property line, and that those homes are 6 feet apart, certain fire code kicks in and requires them to have certain facades where it be entirely brick, no windows, no doors, and so we want to make sure that they're able to develop their home when they may want. So if, by pushing that out to 8, so if one person is 7-3, the next person could only go 5-5,
yeah,
or 7 on that side, 3 on that side. So they still have some flexibility, but it allows them to then not have to adhere to that fire code. So we'll add that provision as well. I think it's something good. And then I had a concern about the commercial in the design guidelines. It was it calls out the commercial design characteristics, but in the settlement agreement, it already addresses my concern where it says it is subject to Cedar Hill City Code, so that's already there. And some of the exhibits just need to be updated. They're still showing the draft PD1 ordinance, so we want to update that to be the one that was adopted. And Chris Grandpa sent me an updated CCNRs for the development about 5:15, so right before this meeting. So that's gone through legal review. I feel comfortable with his red lights on that. So did he send that to you as well?
Yeah.
Okay, so they've got it, you've got it. And I think I don't see any, like, but we're real fast, I didn't see any issue with what he had added. So, with that being, oh, sorry, one more thing. On the plat itself, recorded plat, we just like to request that the, in the notes, that the setbacks be shown. This just makes it easier, so it's definitely improving building plans. And then also in the notes, we want to make sure that the streets are called out as public utility easements as well. They're private streets, but in order to get the city to do any of the work, we just want to call them out as public utility easements as well. That's what I was going to present to the council. So if there's any other issues you've come up with or you foresee, I'd love to hear them and discuss them and get them out right now.
So all of these points were part of the planning commission's finding?
They were either part of their final recommendation to council, and many of them have been incorporated already. So many of them are very small details. Some of the big one is extending the concrete wall along the southern border here, which I think would be a lot to ask, but it's something I don't know that I want to hang my hat on. Is that too much? But that's just me.
What was the reason you were?
Sound barrier, I guess. Or, I don't know if they gave a very good reason, but they're concerned about the impact that the adjacent neighbors would have on these homes would have on these homes. These homes are set back 10 feet from the property line, but they're smaller homes. And that's why I feel like there's probably other ways to mitigate that impact, but by planting a tree, it reduces the sound, but it also gives a different visual look to that back corridor here. So I think beyond wiring the cement wall, there's other things you can do.
Well, there's only about 2/3 of those houses exist that even have that.
Yeah, most of them don't have fences.
So, I mean, even a wild fence among common neighbors would be good. If they want a fence, maybe they don't want a fence.
Well, I think there's going to be a fence whether they want it or not. The fence will be installed And that fence will belong to the HOA. So they will.
Well, I don't foresee, I mean, I know. I haven't heard any comments from any of the people who live there. Have you?
No. In fact, one of them was on the planning commission. He said he was fine with the
fence. Yeah, I would say that they would be happy to most of them.
So,
I mean, with a residential, other than a 30-foot wall, they could be there under other circumstances.
I agree.
I agree with you on your recommendation that we don't require.
Mr. Chairman, when you talk about the second design element on the back side, basically, because I know that we talked about having it on the front, requiring design elements. On the back, because it's so visible, is he just concerned it's just going to be like just a plain stucco wall?
Right, yeah. So you'd be walking down, so imagine walking down the sidewalk on 4700 West, and you see just plain vinyl fence and then just stucco wall behind you. I think that's the concern there. The current design standards for the subdivision already call out that rear facade will have two structural elements, one of them not being vinyl. So yeah, you see on the facade treatments of 4.4 and 4.5 in the design elements, it says a minimum of 3 design elements on the front and minimum of 2 design elements on the side and rear. So he's asking for one of those elements on the rear to be visible above 6 feet.
That makes sense because there's no, can't see it.
Yeah, so I figure if it's a 6-foot fence, then it's gotta be higher than 6 feet in order to see it. Not everyone will see it, obviously.
But I actually like that. Because the houses are gonna be, there's gonna be so many that are gonna be so close together. If you're looking down at a shallow angle, it's just gonna look like a row, or the building is not broken up. There's not much variation, right?
I understand the reason, the rationale.
I'll just specify color and style of fencing.
We're just saying to call out a specific style of fence, but I don't, in my conversation with them, it didn't sound like they had one in mind as a point. It sounded like the fire color at the planning commission was leaning towards 10. So, sure.
Well, what's across the street on the other side?
It's mostly white, right?
I prefer white, I mean, that seems a little.
Yeah, I don't think we should be in the business of.
I agree with Councilmember Getz that. Let the developer pick it.
Yeah.
Who wants to sell them?
Well, it goes with their neighborhood.
It was, it's their fence as well. If it were the city's fence, I would probably feel differently, but we're not assuming the ownership of this fence.
Right. Their fence, I'm just probably want. That's a little bit. To me, you know, definitely wanted to just say, we're matching with the rest of the community, so it could be something crazy.
Yeah.
To me, it's still mine, I'm crazy, I'm not aware.
Yeah.
I don't think so, you never know.
You can get it in black now.
What?
Oh, black, okay, matching with the community, let's go there. So you might want to say earth tone, I don't know if white did count something.
Well, I think what you say, I think you just say something in harmony with parts of the community. It opens up to white, tan, brown. I'm looking across the way here, I see a white, I see dark brown, I see a tan, so
harmony is a good word.
You may have black, wrought iron, right? If you want to put fencing, wrought iron,
black.
So you are gonna get different colors.
Yeah.
But the perimeter fence will all be the same, no matter what, right? So that will be good. The interior, some of you are gonna want.
Like interior, in this neighborhood here, in Cedars West, you're required to have a wrought iron that has to be open, obviously. And that's to prevent, Greg Gordon lives in that neighborhood, but it's to prevent that seeing just a sea of vinyl as you drive through the neighborhood, because they're a neighborhood with really tight setbacks as well. And I think it actually works out well in that neighborhood. Greg, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't. Doesn't bother me.
Well, if you can imagine driving through there and we're using wrought iron, picturing vinyl, you can see what we're talking about. I think that's where the planning commission and I support a recommendation of making it be open. And it can still be vinyl and open, but it just has to be open fencing.
Any other questions or feedback? Yes. Got about 5 minutes. Anything else you want to discuss from here?
Let's go over Cedars Hills Gateway real fast. Based on the Planning Commission's recommendation, and I appreciate Mark Green, who's here in attendance, he's updated this and shown what we've discussed in the Planning Commission. One was we had a number of the AF residents that live just to the south here that are really concerned about this access point here. I've always felt that access point is a must. It has to happen here. If you think about the city's commercial area, there's really not very many places to access the city commercial area from Cedar Hills. So this is, to me, this is a must. So the compromise, rather than having this being a full in, full out access, to restrict it to be full in so you could drive in it from east or west, from the east or the west. But if you're gonna choose this access point to leave, you'd be routed out to the right. So if you wanted to drive back into Cedar Hills, you would head up Cedar Hills, up 4700, up north of 4700, to Cedar Hills Drive and out. It's tough to see on this, but there's a little, almost like teardrop shaped element there that
it's like when you're leaving Chase.
Yes. So that was one
of your leaving Great Clips.
Yeah.
The other issues were these two cutouts on the 4800 West are already there. Eric, UDOT has approved them. But we wanted from the last iteration to this iteration, you see that this has been widened to allow for a lane of traffic coming in and then two lanes of traffic to queue up to exit the site. This one already had that width necessary to do that. And then I think the last thing that we addressed as part of this project was that it was the walkability. So they added a sidewalk on this eastern portion of 4700 West. There still is this PUD that, as these developments come in, will address the walkability for each site, but this is the overall walkability of the plan. This sidewalk on one side is similar to what was done between the McDonald's and Chase Bank. There's only a sidewalk on one side there. But it allows for the walkability to access all points in the subdivision from any sidewalk. So that was what the Planning Commission went over. That's what I was presenting to you tonight. We're not presenting any buildings. I know there's been a lot of discussion about open space and green space as it relates to the commercial land. Keep in mind there's not an open space or green space requirement for commercial. It's a landscaping requirement. It's just meant that as each of these developments come in, they will be required to show what their landscaping plan is. And when it's all said and done, this total of this subdivision plus this retention basin will need to equal 30%.
So on that, one of the things that I talked to Chan about, so that retention basin right now is not part of this property. The developer for this property purchased everything in that area except for that retention basin. The retention basin was gifted to Mr. Young's property from the city to Mr. Young for that retention basin. And so one of the things that I have recommended is that if the developer for the commercial land here on North County Boulevard wants to utilize part of that retention basin towards their 30% landscaping requirement, which I believe that they are interested in counting that, even though it's not their land, that they be responsible to somehow beautify that and make it look nice if they want to count it. Otherwise, their 30% stays within the land that they purchased.
When we talk about the beautifying it, in their conceptual plan, the plans showed a park, and I felt like that was very generous. However, the city, we don't require a park in a commercial area. No other commercial development has done a park. So when we say beautify this, right now, the Cedar Canyon shows that as rock mulch. So I think something we need to figure out is what's the difference in cost between rock mulch and grass, and discuss with the Openshaw group about, hey, would you help us upgrade this to grass?
And it's changing any kind of part of your landscaping.
So I feel like that's a generous thing for the city to do. It'd be similar to the Walmart retention basin. That's behind Walmart, but that retention basin is part of their landscaping. It's not a park, but it's part of their green space. As you drive through the commercial area, you see this retention basin that is considered landscaping. So, and I know it sounds a little finicky, but you have to be careful when you're using terms like open space, green space, and landscaping in terms of commercial areas. They are very different.
With the retention basin, it seems to me it's a good opportunity. In the past, we've talked about ways to conserve water, maybe not do grass, but look at a zero-scale design.
We can. It just, some of the feedback that I've been getting is that there's this concern that there isn't any open space element to the commercial zone, and that would allow for some use in that area.
That's what I would like to, I'm not thinking just straight dirt, but really nicely designed.
It really could be a little bit of both,
yeah.
I think our retention basin is almost used by kids who are here anyway quite a bit.
For sledding.
Yeah. For sledding, yeah.
And you could put it in a way that doesn't affect people who want to sled on it. But you could make it look nice. As we've talked with the developers, we're really hoping for some food options here. And it'd be nice to have like a grass area for people to sit. It doesn't need to be shaded with a pavilion and a bathroom and water fountain, but it'd be nice to have a grass area. Just if you actually like it.
Water fountain. Sounds good to me.
Just a water fountain.
Anyway, that's the Cedar Hills Gateway. We're not approving the buildings tonight. We're just approving the land. And as each building gets, as each of these parcels gets sold off or leased or however they do that, those buildings will then go through the approval process, going before the Planning Commission and the City Council before we really ran final plans. So that's what I got.
All right, thank you. Council, it is 6:28, so let's go ahead and adjourn the work session, and then we'll start council session at 7. So I want to make a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Motion by Councilmember Ellsworth, is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Miller, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?